Happy Mother's Day, ladies. And, you know, we always talk about the love of a mother and the care and compassion and the softness and the tender heart. I'm going to take another direction today. I want to talk about the strength of a mother. Because there are a few things, I don't care if it's a steel cable, it's not stronger than a mother. Mothers have to have a toughness about them that we men should be envious of, but most of the time I don't think we really recognize just how strong a mother can be. I want to bring up a few examples out of the Scripture so we can look and see that, you know, even well beyond the care and compassion and concern and love that comes from a mother, just how strong they have to be. So let's look, you know, kind of looking through some things chronologically here. In Genesis 25, we have the story of Rebekah, the wife of Isaac. And Rebekah becomes pregnant, and she becomes concerned because there seems to be a conflict going on in her. And we find out in the story of her pregnancy that she gets an angelic visitation, and she gets this story told to her that there are two nations at war within her, Jacob and Esau. And we have these two children contending against each other. And we've heard the story of the birth where Esau kind of gets his hand out first. And says, "Oh, this is the firstborn. We'll tie a ribbon around him." And by, the two are born. And they live a life of contending against each other. But Rebekah has some insight that she's given in this visitation. You see, the custom of the day was this. The firstborn had primacy. The firstborn had the birthright. They were entitled to lead the family. They were entitled to a double portion of the inheritance. But during this visitation with Rebekah, Rebekah finds out that the older will serve the younger. Wait a minute. That's not supposed to happen. Our society doesn't recognize that arrangement. It's not right, it's not proper, but yet God favored Jacob. And he favored Jacob, I think, because he knew the personality. As the boys grow, we find that Esau despises the things of God, and Jacob loves them. And we have the whole episode where as these boys come to maturity, they contend against each other, and Mama knows the secret. She knows how it's going to come out. She knows that Esau is going to be second to his younger brother. And frankly, as we get into Genesis 26, she sort of helps that come about. Now, we assume that she was led by God in what she did, but you know, Esau, you know, by himself releases his birthright to his brother for a pot of soup. But when it comes to receiving the father's blessing, Rebekah makes it happen. Isaac is old and he's blind, and she helps Jacob disguise himself so that he can receive his father's blessing. And then she is wise enough to tell Jacob, "You might ought to get out of town before Esau figures out what happened," and sends him to her parents. So, how strong did she have to be to carry this secret and to swim upstream against the flow of society and the flow of the family and the way things have always been done? But she had a secret revelation from God that the younger son was going to be the one through whom the blessing was carried on. Had to be difficult. There had to be the easiest thing in the world to do would have been to go with the flow and just let things happen as they naturally do. But she carried within her all those years that revelation that she had, and the ability then, when the time was right, to act to help it to happen. We go to the next generation, and that Jacob, while he is in a foreign country, finds a woman that he falls in love with, and he goes to marry her, only to find himself tricked, and he's given in marriage to her older sister, and then he has to work another 7 years, an extra 7 years, to get the one that he loved. But when the two sisters are married to Jacob, we have this contest. Because, you see, they tried to win their husband's love and affection and primacy by how many sons they could bear him. And we go through this entire two chapters of Genesis 29 and 30 with this battle between Rachel and Leah to try to win the husband's love and affection by bearing him sons. They had a large family. And they actually got to the point that in order to try to win their position, they couldn't bear, they had these spells of barrenness. And they actually even gave their maids to be wives to their husband so that they could bear children. And then we have this entire story where these 12 sons grow up. It had to be hard. It had to be difficult. Many among us and around us are in mixed families. Dad's family and mom's family and a blended family. And that's not always easy, because somebody is always contending to be first. And sometimes the siblings all blend together, and sometimes they contend against each other. How strong a mother has to be to embrace an entire family, and how strong these two had to be able to embrace this entire crazy soap opera family of four wives and 12 boys, but yet they did. In Exodus chapter 2, we find the story of a woman we later learn her name is Jochebed, and she's the mother of Moses. But you see, there's a problem, because Pharaoh, in order to keep the Israelites in bondage, had ordered that all the male babies be drowned in the Nile, cast them into the river. And Jochebed bears Moses, and she can't bear to throw him in the river. So she comes up with a plan to save him, and that plan to save him involved releasing him. What kind of strength there had to be there. What kind of insight and power, and one would assume some kind of relationship with God to give her this idea that she had. Well, what I'll do is I'll take care of observing the letter of the law. I'll put him in the river in a basket. And I'll be very careful about where I put him, because I know that here is this place that the daughters of Pharaoh go in the river to bathe. And we'll carefully place this basket with this baby, and this baby is so cute, they're going to love him. It's going to inspire the maternal instincts in these ladies that are there, and we'll just float this baby down the river, and they'll see him, and they'll take him in. Gee, I hope it works. It's the only chance he's got. How strong do you have to be as a mother to let the child go? To trust in God that he's going to be protected and he's going to be saved and he's going to be rescued. To trust in the good human nature of the people who are going to find this baby, that they don't say, ooh, that's one of those Hebrews, sink the basket. Man, there was strength in that woman. And then the plan goes on. The baby's rescued. And older daughter Miriam goes, hey, ladies, if you need a wet nurse for this baby, I know this Hebrew woman who can nurse your baby for you. So here comes the mother of Moses into the house of Pharaoh to be his wet nurse. So he gets the best of both worlds. First of all, he gets to be alive. Second, he gets to grow up in the courts of Pharaoh. And third, and most important to who he was called to be, and who he would become, he gets to be nursed by his mother, not only with the milk from her body, but with the truth from her mind and her heart, the faith that was in her. He gets to know who he is. He gets to know God's plan. And he gets to know that through a woman who probably, I don't know if she ever got to reveal to Pharaoh's daughter that she was actually the mother of that baby. It probably wouldn't have been wise for her to do so. So here she is as a secret agent. Here, take care of this child. I trust that he'll be taken care of. But then I get to put my 2 cents worth in and guide and mold and point him toward the man that he would become. The old proverb talks about if you love something enough, you can let it go and it'll come back if it loves you. Well, Moses eventually came back to his own people. And I believe it was because not only of the call of God, but because of the seeds and the instruction of a strong woman who enabled him to live and who nurtured him spiritually and physically as he grew. Jump a couple chapters. We've got the wife of Moses. Moses has grown. He's come into his own. God has called him through a vision of a bush that burned with flame but was not consumed. And he's been called to go to Egypt to command Pharaoh to let his people go. And he sets about this journey. He's on his way going, and this incident happens. Because you see, in his sojourn in the land of Midian, Moses had not honored the covenant that God made with Abraham. The covenant, the Brit Milah, the covenant of circumcision. And Moses' son had not been circumcised and did not bear in his body the mark of the covenant. We have this incident that apparently Zipporah is aware of what's happening in the spiritual realm because spiritual forces came to do Moses harm because of the fact that he had not honored the covenant. So Zipporah literally takes matters into her own hands and performs a circumcision and casts the evidence at Moses' feet. Here's another strong woman. Here's a woman that apparently was more spiritually aware than the man who saw the burning bush. She realized something is wrong in the spiritual realm. She discovered what had to be done and she did it. She didn't argue about it. She didn't ask for a man to do it. She did what needed to be done. That is the strength of a mother. How many times in the modern world do mothers do what needs to be done? Maybe because their husband can't or won't do it. Maybe because they're the only one that becomes aware of the situation. Maybe they're the only one who has the spiritual eyes to see in some households. But they stood forth. Zipporah stood forth and did what she needed to do. Now, how hard did that have to be for a mother to do? How difficult did that have to be? Because you see, it wasn't done in the normal manner. In the normal manner, it's done when the child is an infant. We get the distinct impression that that time has passed. How old was the boy? I don't know. But it had to be a difficult thing for her to do. Yet she did what she had to do to save her family. And in saving her family, she saved the mission that her husband was called to do. Strong woman. Book of 1 Samuel. We meet a woman who has had a difficult life. Her name is Hannah. And she has longed for a child, and in particular for a son, for years, and doesn't have it. And she would go periodically to pray, and she goes to pray, and the man of God sees her and says, you know, she thinks she's drunk, actually, because it says her mouth's moving and no words are coming out. Hey, mamas, you've had that day probably when your mouth moved and no words could come out. You're so desperate for something. You don't know exactly what to do or what to say or how to pray, but you pray anyway. And the man of God sees her, and she explains that and sees her sincerity and says, God grant what it is you're praying for. And part of what she had prayed was a vow. She said, God, if you'll let me have a son, I'll give him to your service. I want so desperately to have this experience to bear a son. I want it so desperately. God, I'll give him to you. And she came with child, and she bore a male child. His name was Samuel. And when the time was right, she took him and gave him to the priest. Took him to Eli. And she didn't just take him to Eli and dump him. She took him to Eli, and she also provided some sustenance and care and assistance for him. You know, she would make him, as he grew, she would make him robes that he could wear as he grew. And she took this child that she so desperately wanted and that she so desperately loved, and she gave him into God's service, knowing that he wouldn't be living in her house, he wouldn't be right there with her, but knowing that if God blessed her with this, that God could do something with it. And Samuel became a huge figure in the history of the people of Israel. In fact, he anointed a king named David. And David at one time did something untoward and ended up married to another man's wife. And that wife lost her first child, but her second child was born, and David made her a promise. So Bathsheba, our son Solomon will sit on the throne after me. Well, this was a problem to David's other sons, who were older, who were from other wives. And eventually the time comes when David becomes old and feeble, and his son Adonijah decides it's time for me to be king. And he sets about proclaiming that he is now king and being this magnanimous benefactor king who goes around and grants people things so he could build a following. The man of God goes to Bathsheba and says to her, I thought Solomon was supposed to be king after David. Adonijah's announcing himself as king. What are we going to do about it? Well, the safe thing to do was to go run and hide. Bathsheba goes to David and says, hey, whoa, hold it, wait a minute. Didn't you say that my son was supposed to be king after you? Well, Adonijah is proclaiming himself king. You see, here is a strong woman. Here is a mother who stood up for her son and said, whoa, hold it, wait a minute. Somebody's trying to usurp the place that he's supposed to be, and it's not right. I'm not going to be quiet. I'm going to go fix it. Another strong woman. A woman who was out for the best for her family. Well, Solomon becomes king. And in the third chapter of 1 Kings, we find out here's a situation where there are two women of not the best character, both of which have babies, and one of those babies is killed in an accident. And so the one who lost the child claims the other woman's child as her own. And this is brought before King Solomon. Solomon, inspired by God, I believe, says, well, if y'all can't figure this out, I've got a solution for you. Give me my sword. I'll give each of you half the baby. what happens? The real mom says, no, 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 no. Don't do that. Let her have the child. She was willing to let her child be stolen so that he could live. It almost echoes the Moses story. I'm willing to give him up so that he not be harmed. Only a mother who loves could be strong enough to let that happen. The woman who'd already lost her child says, sure, fine, that's cool. Go ahead. The woman whose child it really was said, this can't be. And I'm willing to release this child to this woman who's trying to steal him from me in order to preserve his life, in order for the best possible outcome to be. Strength. Wisdom. Go through the rest of the books of Kings and Chronicles, and we find story after story after story of the kings of the northern kingdom and the kings of the southern kingdom, and there is one common denominator among all of those that God brands as a good king. In every case that there is somebody who did right in the sight of the Lord, it mentions their mother in the description of who they are. And these mothers are the daughter of the priest. It's somebody who is a godly person. It's not a pagan. It's not a wicked person. But of all the good kings of Hezekiah and Josiah, their mothers are mentioned, and their mothers are godly people. They are out of the household of the priest. They come from some place where it seems that they had a good foundation, because it's considered, well, it was definitely true in biblical times, and it's often true today, that the most influence a child gets in their formative years comes from their mother. And a person who is a godly person, a person who has integrity and strength of character, is going to impart that into the life of the child. And as Scripture tells us, if you raise up a child in the way he should go, when he's old, he won't depart from it. Or what we might say today often is they might depart from it, but at least they've got an anchor to come back to. There's something back there in the back of their mind that says, this is right and this is wrong. This is godly and this is ungodly. And I might be prodigal for the moment, but I got to go back home. Not to daddy's house, but to mama's house, where I was taught what's right and what's wrong. We can't forget our New Testament. And the one prominent mother in that tale is Mary. A mother of extraordinary circumstance. Here is this young lady, and she receives this angelic visitation with this annunciation of what God's plan is. And she said, so be it. I'm willing. Do what you need to do. And she had to undergo all of the talk and the rumor. You know, she was pregnant before they got married. There's Mary. You know about her. Hear the murmurs and the innuendo. But you see, she bore through that because she knew what the truth was. And she also knew what the angel had said about the destiny of the child that she carried. And by and by the time comes and she gives birth, and the time comes when it's time to go and dedicate the child at the temple. And they go into the temple and they have two encounters with some elderly people, with Simeon and with Anna. And they say things to her that reinforces what the angel had said to her 10 months before. And they also say things that gives her some things to think about. In particular, Simeon, in talking about what this child will do, said, a sword will pierce your heart also, or your soul also. What did Mary share, and what did she carry inside her for the next 30 plus years. Because you see, if she shared too much, they'd have said in their best Barney Fife, "She's a nut. People don't have angelic visitations. People don't have babies without the normal biological function. Better send her someplace they can take care of her." So she couldn't have said much. She knew. Joseph knew. I assume her immediate family knew. We know her Aunt Elizabeth knew what was going on. But how far beyond that did her circle of support go? How far beyond that did anybody have a clue? So she carries all this stuff inside. You know, mothers still carry a lot of stuff inside. They carry their pain and their concern. They carry their hurt. They carry the burden for their children. They want their children and their grandchildren to grow up and to be successful and to be godly people. And it doesn't always come out that way. You'll worry when they go on a trip. How many of you have adult children and you still tell them when they're traveling someplace, "You call me when you get home. Call me, text me, let me know you got home safe." How many know my kids do that to me too? There's a burden, and Mary's burden had to be extraordinary because she had a glimpse of what Jesus' destiny was going to be. But she didn't know the particulars. She didn't know that he would have to be despised and rejected and beaten and crucified and resurrected in order to be what he was called to be. And don't you know that last week of his life, she had to be living in mortal turmoil. She had to be, she had her soul pierced by a sword. And then came Sunday morning. He was dead and he's alive. What an emotional roller coaster. You see, we always celebrate the tenderness and the love and the compassion and the care of a mother. But today I want to celebrate the strength of a mother because there's nothing like it. Gentlemen, the things that women go through physically and emotionally, we'd be crying in the corner while they're doing what needs to be done. When we're off hunting and fishing and working and doing the things that we like to do or just cagged out in front of the TV, the strength of a mother gets done what needs to be done. And we need to give them the honor that they are due, not to build them up in some way to put them on some kind of a pedestal, but to honestly say, "Thank you." It goes beyond the family. Most modern American churches would not exist if it were not for the spiritual mothers that glue them together. What would we do? What would the history of this church been without an Evelyn Joseph? What would the history of this church been without a Lima Barnett? What would the history of this church been without this whole plethora, this cloud of people that used to sit in these seats, that did what needed to be done and held it together? Where would this church be if it wasn't for the ladies sitting here today? We don't give enough credit because, you see, we tend to see things in masculine terms, but the church is going to be the bride of Christ. And the church has to nurture people. And the church has to be strong enough to shake people when they need shaking. We need to be as strong as a mother in order to fulfill the mission of the church. So instead of taking for granted that which we have seen and not perceived, let's think about what kind of strength it takes to be a mother. Let's think about these examples that we talked about this morning and how strong they had to be, and how they put their love into action and did what needed to be done, even when it was not pleasant, even when it was difficult, even if it involves sacrifice, let's let the church be a mother to the next generation of the church. I don't care if you're a guy or a gal, we need to be more motherly in who we are and in what we represent to the community. Now, saying that, we also need to be strong enough to draw a line in the sand when it's time to draw a line in the sand. We can't fall into the trap of loving people to death because we won't confront them. Bathsheba confronted David when she thought there was an injustice. She said, no, it's in the right. Stop. Hold it. Wait a minute. You said this. This is what's happening. Fix it. You see, we need to be able to do that as the church. We love everyone and we want the best for everyone, but we also have to be strong enough to say, hold it, wait a minute. What you're doing is not right. Let's help you fix it. How strong are you this morning? They say a chain is only as strong as its weakest link. Because when you pull on it and put it under tension, something's going to yield first. And then the chain's useless when it breaks. We need to be stronger, church. We all need to be able to stand with the strength of these women that we talked about today. And we need to be able to minister to people in a way that's effective. How about it? Can you be as strong as a mother today? Because you see, the strength of a mother and the strength of the church run pretty parallel. The strength of a godly mother is something extraordinary, and the strength of a godly church is the strength of a godly mother multiplied exponentially. That's why we gather together. That's why we minister together. Because you know what? All of us, there are days that we need to be comforted, and there are days that we need to be spanked. And Mama knows how to do the right thing in the right season. And the church needs to know how to do the right thing in the right season.